He's on the faculty of Harvard University's medical school. He's been a urologist at a respected hospital for 30 years, and he gets fired from the hospital for telling the truth about certain health risks. What?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, we could absolutely focus on the Middle East today. We could absolutely focus on Turkey shooting down a Russian fighter jet, allegedly violating Turkish airspace. Russia says it's going to pay for that. Some say it looks like we're wandering right into World War III now. And all the while, America seems inert under our current leadership, inept under our current leadership. We could focus on that, but we're not. This is Michael Brown. I want to encourage you to be praying for our president, praying for our administration, praying for the next president that God will give us, praying that God will have his way in the midst of world conflict. I was hanging out this morning, actually doing a workout with my trainer and my two grandsons, one visiting, the other living nearby, and I was thinking later on, okay, they're 12. One just turned 12. The other's about to turn 12. They're 12 years old. Not that long from now, 6-7 years from now, they could be at a stage where they're, let's say you had a draft. They could potentially be drafted. I started to think of the consequences of a war, the hellish consequences of war, the suffering involved, the upheaval involved, the lives that are forever affected, the families that are forever affected. And things happening in other parts of the world, sometimes the reality of it doesn't strike us. I want to encourage you, pray, Lord, your name be hallowed in the world. Pray, Lord, your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Pray specifically for Syria. Pray specifically for the Middle East. Pray specifically for our leadership. I am not a conservative radio host who spends all my time bashing President Obama. And if I were a liberal radio host, I'd spend all my time bashing the Republicans. That's not who I am. Yes, I'm conservative, but I am not primarily a conservative radio host. And all I'm doing is looking at things through the lens of conservative politics. That's not who I am. You know that. I'm ashamed and embarrassed about the way our president is handling the crisis. I feel the weak ways that it's being handled, the lack of decisiveness, the lack of standing with France to deal with a common enemy, namely ISIS. I think it's shameful. Many others terribly grieved over it. If I was conservative radio host, I'd be bashing him. That would be my main topic day in, day out, day in, day out. And you know it's not. I'm just grieved. And therefore, I'm saying we need to pray. We need to pray for a president to do what is best and what is right and for wisdom for our government. Later today, in the second hour, which you can catch online at Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, or if you subscribe by podcast or get it all, we're going to talk some more about the refugee crisis. I've got some more perspectives. I wrote an article on it. I'm going to interact with comments that others have made. But things are happening right in the States that you need to know about. Things are happening right in the homeland that you need to know about. Things are happening of great, great importance that we need to talk about honestly, candidly. In a couple of minutes, we're going to be joined by a medical doctor, respected doctor, 30 years working as a urologist at one hospital in the Boston area, faculty member of the Harvard Medical School, and he gets fired from his hospital, in short, for telling the truth about certain health risks. So we come back, we'll be joined by Dr. Paul Church right here on The Line of Fire.
fire we please.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, I want to give you a scenario. I want to give you a potential scenario here, all right? This is Michael Brown, your voice of moral sanity and spiritual clarity. Let's say you are a doctor serving in a hospital, a children's hospital, and you begin to notice more and more kids coming in who are obese. You begin to track these kids over a period of years. You begin to see, before other medical researchers maybe have noticed this or before it's been politically correct to talk about it, a number of health risks associated with obesity. And you begin to document these. And after all, you're a medical doctor. You're caring for health, the health of your patients, especially these children. You begin to document this more and more, and as you are getting more and more concerned that this is not being addressed and the kids are not being counseled about this or their parents are not being counseled about this, your hospital begins to celebrate Fat Pride Days, and your hospital begins to send out McDonald's menus through the hospital encouraging folks to get fast food on this particular day on Fat Pride Week. And you say, that's wrong. We shouldn't be doing that. And why are you sending this out through the hospital? As a result of that, you get fired for raising concerns about obesity. You say, that could never happen. Well, I want you to hear what actually did happen. My guest, Dr. Paul Church, 66 years old, married to the same woman for 43 years, two daughters with six grandkids between them, serving on the faculty of Harvard Medical School and serving at a hospital in Boston as urologist for the last 30 years. Dr. Church, welcome to The Line of Fire. Thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure, and good to be with you, Dr. Brown.
Now, Dr. Church, what have you been teaching at Harvard over these years?
Well, as a urologist, I see a variety of patients, adult patients with both male and female problems dealing with the urinary and reproductive system. But I did have a lot of my career beginning in the early 80s and continuing during this time when HIV was just becoming part of the problem with the epidemic of sorts. And seeing some of my own patients, succumbing to the complications of HIV and dying of AIDS. Fortunately, in about the mid-90s, the antiviral medications came along and began to reduce the lethality of HIV, but nevertheless, it's a serious chronic disease. And as part of this whole, problem, I realized that my homosexual patients, gay, lesbian, bisexual, were, involved with lifestyles that were, potentially self-destructive and harmful, were engaging in behaviors, sexual behaviors that put them at high risk. With that in mind, as one of my hospitals began to become highly promotional about LGBT activities, I express criticism and challenge them to be more neutral, considering the risks involved. It seemed like a very reasonable, no-brainer type of challenge, and yet I was met with opposition from them that I was discriminating or harboring discrimination, that I was not entitled to criticize this lifestyle that they were so readily promoting. I was shocked, basically. I was subjected to at least three investigations, and the most recent one has led to a revocation of my staff appointment at the hospital, which is still under appeal, but these are relatively serious disciplinary actions that get reported to licensing bureaus and so forth that have an impact on my livelihood and my ability to continue to practice. And the thing that's different from, other cases that people might be aware of is that not about discrimination. I'm not discriminating against LGBT patients. I have, I think, probably more than my share over the years. I'm not withholding services, but I am suggesting that as policies go, a hospital, a medical center, and organized medicine should not be in a promotional, endorsing, celebratory type mode when it comes to projecting endorsement for what are, you know, potentially harmful behaviors.
All right, Dr. Church, what are some of the things that you documented over the years that would be specific to those engaging in homosexual acts? Or let's just say, since we don't know what given people will do in private, heterosexual, homosexual, that generally speaking would be more common in homosexual relations than in heterosexual relations. What type of health problems did you start to document, did you start to see with consistency?
Well, the sine qua non of male homosexuality is sodomy, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not unique to homosexuality, but certainly as a group, they engage in sodomy and other types of sexual behaviors involving the anus. These are much more prone to spread HIV than conventional vaginal sex, if you would. So that the rectum is not designed to be a recipient for this kind of behavior, and therefore is much more prone to trauma and to infections and the spread of infections. So, I mean, if you look at the statistics, and these, I'm not making these up, these are available from Center for Disease Control, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
The homosexual male population is about 2%, and yet they account for more than half of the active cases of HIV and two-thirds of the new cases of HIV. So despite the knowledge about so-called safe sex and HIV, there's still it's the only group that's having an increase in HIV. And in addition to that, I mean, STDs, sexually transmitted diseases, are more common among this group. Risk-taking tends to be higher, promiscuity is higher. Anal cancer, which is probably a result of exposure to HPV, which is human papillomavirus, is also more prevalent. There's a number of parasitic infections, psychiatric issues that are much more prone to be seen in the LGBT population than in the general population.
All right, and this is, we could say, commonly known, well documented, some of it historic, and you never refused service, you never refused treatment. There was never, in your decades of service, any accusation that you discriminated against an LGBT patient, anything like that. What got your attention was when the hospital began to promote these things. You're talking about e-blast announcing a gay pride event or something like that. So the twofold question would be, one, why is the hospital in general, just as a medical facility, promoting a social political event? And two, why is it promoting an event that celebrates something that leads to certain acts that are unhealthy? When you got the first e-blast or announcement about a gay pride event, what was your reaction?
I was pretty much appalled, because the gay pride events, at least in Boston, include the Pride Parade, which is really a sordid, vulgar affair with, you know, whips and chains and marchers that mock the Christian church, the Catholic church, dressed in underwear. I mean, this is hardly the sort of thing that a respectable medical center ought to be promoting. And yet, I just had to wonder whether they understood fully what was going on. But in multiple communications over the years, I think it's fair to say that they were willing to ignore that. They are promoting a social agenda that has absolutely nothing to do with the practice of medicine. And they're putting that as a higher priority to their primary mission, which is to promote healthy behaviors and good life choices.
Mm.
So it just struck me that they were being driven by a social political agenda that was contradictory.
Yeah, and again, as you say, driven by a social political agenda, whereas their hospital, you're involved in healthcare. We're going to go behind the scenes and find out what happened when Dr. Church raised his criticisms, and now he becomes the target.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I am speaking with Dr. Paul Church, a respected urologist serving in a major hospital in the Boston area for 3 decades. Never a charge of discrimination against him, of mistreating a patient, of refusing service to a patient. But as he became alarmed at the health risks associated with homosexual sexual acts and began to document these things, he became shocked when the hospital, remember, a hospital, we're not talking about a political group or some other group, when the hospital began promoting gay pride events and the like, and took exception to Dr. Church raising protest over this and saying, you shouldn't be doing this, to the point that he was ultimately terminated by the hospital. Dr. Church, you've had hearings now. You have appealed this to the hospital. It's outrageous. It's unrighteous. They've not accused you of acts of discrimination. They've not accused you of mistreating patients, of any type of malpractice, but rather they have accused you of discrimination because you are protesting the hospital's involvement in social and political events that you feel lead to unhealthy behaviors. What have they said? I imagine you're talking to well-educated, rational people. What have they said when you've raised the issues to them and spoken of the hypocrisy of what they're doing?
That's what's so disturbing. I mean, there's been any of a number of committees assigned to investigate me, and I kept thinking, well, if I can just get it in front of colleagues and not administrators, surely that will be a sympathetic ear to what I'm saying, because they'll understand what's involved. And I was basically met with silence or even resistance, some people saying this is some kind of smokescreen that I'm creating. But the statistics, the data are all there, the Center for Disease Control and any of a number of other credible sources. They even issued what I consider a gag order in 2011, where it read that I was not to express my views about homosexuality to any members of the staff, visitors, guests. you name it. It was sort of a blanket gag order, and I showed this to attorneys and legal counsel, and you know, it was obvious that you cannot have your freedom of expression restricted in those terms. So they continued to advocate for the LGBT activities, and I felt like I needed to continue to advocate for healthier lifestyles. In addition to the medical side of it, there's also the fact that our hospital staff has a diversity of views on morality and religious conviction. So that this is objectionable to those of us that do not want to see this promoted in the workplace. And that was also ignored and has been ignored. So basically, whenever there was any remarks that could be picked up by staff members, those staff members that were opposed to what I was saying would say that my remarks were offensive. And I think, as you know from the chapter, you have a great book called The Queer Thing Happened to America. It's a clarity of that writing is wonderful, and it's a complete treatise on how this all happened. But if you say something that is contrary to someone else's view, especially with this subject, they can say they're offended, and there's nothing worse than offending somebody now, even if you're talking about conflicting worldviews. So the offense here is that people that are sympathetic to this LGBT lifestyle find remarks that are coming from the medical statistics, coming from the Bible, coming from a moral standpoint, offensive, and you're not supposed to offend people. So I've been subjected to investigation after investigation, and much to my dismay, they have decided to revoke my appointment. And even though I'm in it, still in an appeal phase, these have, like I said, a negative impact on my ability to continue my career.
Yeah, quite so. And again, you've been doing this all as a doctor. You are a committed Christian. You've volunteered on medical trips, a dozen medical missions trips to countries like Mexico and Africa. But it appears that Christian voices or Muslim voices that would protest or Jewish voices that would protest, those have no weight. You can offend those voices. But more importantly, simply as a medical doctor raising your voice, as a doctor should. Again, I use the analogy about obesity and a fat pride week and celebrating McDonald's, to just say on a medical viewpoint, simply on a medical viewpoint, that wouldn't be done. That would be counterproductive and contradictory. The same here. Dr. Church, if you can stay with us, I want to just continue this conversation with you. I appreciate your time. And I want to find out if there's anything that we can do. So just real quickly, before we go to a break, is there anything that the general public can do? Have doctors and others across the country stood up with you? Just in short, is there anything that we can do or others are doing?
Yeah, I think there is. I mean, there are places where you need to confront this type of agenda, and you could. It might be in a workplace of another type of organization, or you might want to support an organization that's confronting it. But I mean, it clearly needs to be balanced, and we're being overrun by just sort of propaganda from the LGBT group, and we're being silenced, and that's not right. So everyone has probably an opportunity somewhere where they engage society that they can react to it.
All right, excellent. And to find out more, massresistance.org, massresistance.org. Just look for Dr. Church's story. You'll find it there with a lot more information. All right, friends, we want to do something special this week to continue what we did last week and to be a blessing to you with this holiday season. My good friend Sid Roth, Messianic Jewish believer Sid Roth, sponsored a debate between Rabbi Shmuley Boteach and yours truly. Sid moderated it and then weighed in with his own passionate sharing of his testimony, and Shmuley and Sid interacted, and I interacted with Shmuley. We debated who is the real kosher Jesus. It's on two DVDs and a beautiful package. It's a $20 value plus postage. But this week, it's yours for your gift of any size to help us with our radio ministry, to help us with this vital and important work. So be as generous as you can, but whatever you can afford, I want to get it to you. You'll be blessed by this, or use it as a holiday gift. And this is a great time to make a year-end contribution to the ministry here. So the number to call, 1-800-278-9978. This is available only online. Only by calling. 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. Get this. It's riveting viewing. Trust me on it. Educational, informative, eye-opening, and for your gift of any size. We also have a great resource offer to check out online. The Lord is good. This is a great week to be thankful.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Save the nation. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the line of fire. All my good friends listening on WEZE in Boston, this hits close to home. So Dr. Church has been on the medical staff of Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. He served as a clinical urologist and assistant professor of surgery at Harvard Medical School. So you're talking about someone with stature and esteem. Dr. Church, you are a committed Christian. If someone challenged you and said, well, you are just showing typical Christian bias against homosexuals because of your outdated religious views, aside from taking exception to the notion of these being outdated religious views, would you say, yes, I'm taking exception as a doctor and as a Christian? Or would you say, in this case, I'm taking exception purely as a doctor?
I think it's both. I mean, even if these behaviors were the healthiest behaviors in the world, I think we know from Scripture that this is not part of God's design, that there's a design for sex between heterosexuals, the married heterosexuals, and there's a reason for that, and you can certainly justify, I think, a biblical viewpoint from any of a number of angles. So, there does happen to be this medical part of it, and for a hospital to not recognize that, I think, is hypocritical. But on the other hand, the biblical and moral side of it are equally or more important in my mind.
Mm. And as far as other staff at the hospital, doctors, nurses, others that work there, you said that there's diversity there. So, in other words, there would be other people, because of their religious or moral beliefs, that would not be happy with celebrating a gay pride event. It's got nothing to do whatsoever with their ability to do their jobs or their responsibilities at their hospitals. But you're saying that their views, their sensitivities are basically ignored, whereas if a gay worker was offended, that would tip the scales.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think the other folks that are, you know, committed Christians or Orthodox Jews or Muslims, what have you, they're intimidated to speak up because of they see what's happened to me. And I think we have this society now where we're supposed to accept and affirm this kind of behavior, and if you criticize it, you're going to get in hot water, which is what's happened to me. But on the other hand, I've been determined to advocate for what's right and accept the consequences, but nevertheless fight back. Mm-hmm. I've been joined along the way by Liberty Council, which is a legal organization that defends Christian rights and defends rights of freedom of speech, and I found their help to be invaluable. So I would just want to say that they've been in with me on this. I mean, other organizations like the American Family Association, Massachusetts Family Institute, Christian Medical and Dental Association have all written letters of support and have been helpful. There's been petitions on the internet with thousands of people signing petitions in support of my position. And all of this, I'm not sure it's made a huge difference, but the fact that this appeal is still sort of on hold and that they haven't come to a final decision may indicate that they realize what's happening.
Yeah, maybe they recognize that political correctness only goes so far. All right, got another segment with Dr. Church. Dawood, want to get to your question. We'll get to some other questions as well from my guests. We'll be right back.
Send it, Lord. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. I've not been giving out the number, but if you have a question for Dr. Paul Church, 866-348-7884. Let's grab a call from a listener, our friend Dawood in Springfield, Virginia. Welcome to the broadcast. What's your question for Dr. Church?
Hi, how are you doing, Dr. Church?
Good.
Question is actually concerning my wife, and the reason she's not actually calling in is because she's nervous to attract attention to herself. So my wife is actually a counseling psychologist, and we, and as you know, situations are coming up just like in your position, whereas, you know, what happens whenever she gets that, she's told she has to counsel that transgender patient or that person who's struggling with this or that. Mm. So what would you say to those who are out there who are working in the medical community, especially my wife who's listening in right now, what would you say to her at this moment to give her advice and encouragement, sir?
An excellent question. It's just so difficult to know what to say because there are state laws now and societies that are controlling the conversation that make it difficult for practitioners to be perfectly honest with patients. In fact, I have been reluctant to confront my patients with the fact that their behaviors are putting them at risk because I fear that they'll consider me judgmental and report me. So my advice would be, you know, go after the policies, go after the organizations, go after the state ordinances that seem to be restricting it, and keep it out of the office and not personal with patients and with the conversations that one has with patients.
Yeah, and just to jump in, Dawood, then I have a follow-up question for you, Dr. Church. But I know in the counseling area, it can be very, very difficult because let's say your wife is asked to counsel someone who's openly lesbian. Well, fine, of course she's going to counsel that person. But what if she realizes that some of the conflicts this person is having, or someone who is identifying as transgender, and it's clear that this person has deeper issues and the transgender things are just masking that, does she dare raise those things? Does she say, the problem is this? And if she does, now she is bigoted or discriminatory. It becomes very, very difficult in that case. She couldn't discourage a homosexual relationship, even if that relationship was causing problems, because she would be allegedly considered a homophobe. I don't know if you're familiar with the American Association of Christian Counselors, but they may be a good resource. They have nearly 15,000 members from what their website says. And the website is aacc.net, aacc.net. She can consult with them for wisdom, or if there's an association that she can be part of, if she's not already, that brings solidarity. The other thing is to consult with an organization like Liberty Counsel, which is lc.org, or the Alliance Defending Freedom, which is teladf.org. So Liberty Counsel, lc.org, or the Alliance Defending Freedom, teladf.org. These are Christian legal associations providing help, in many ways gratis, with people that are serving in these various capacities. And then you just ask, okay, what can I and can't I do legally? This way she knows if she did the right thing and it was legal and she gets in trouble for it, she can then say, okay, she calls one of these organizations and they write a letter on her behalf and they make the people understand, no, you don't have the legal right to prosecute her. I have a friend who's a high school teacher. He may even be listening now. And sometimes the school has overstepped its bounds and not given religious liberties that they're supposed to give, or equal freedoms to different student groups. And he knows the law well. And he's gone to them and gotten others with legal power to back it up and write to the school and say, you don't have the right to do this. and they've had to back down. So the other Christian counselors, Dawood, they would be a good resource. And then either of these two Christian legal organizations, Liberty Counsel, LC.org, or the Alliance Defending Freedom, TellADF.org, their contact number's there, and she can simply say, what can I and can't I do legally? And then she can determine how far she can go with her own conscience. So thank you for the call. So Dr. Church, back to you then. Yeah, go ahead.
Could I just add one more thing to what you said? There are listeners out there that are knowledgeable about these subjects, physicians or health professionals, psychiatrists, psychologists, that want to jump in and form a council of sorts of people that have credentials and have credibility. We are looking to organize such a council that could speak to these issues in public and feel like they have the right to do so from a professional standpoint. There's an organization called the Alliance for Therapeutic Choice and Scientific Integrity, which has a website, and they do reparative therapy, and this is the kind of council that we're trying to put together with people that are knowledgeable and have good credentials. So if there's listeners out there, please get in touch with me, and we'll have a conversation.
And should they do that by way of massresistance.org, or what's the best way to...
I think so. Mass Resistance has been at my side the whole time, and they just have been very, very supportive, and they know how to reach me.
Great. Yeah, so friends, through the massresistance.org website, if you're listening as a medical professional that would have expertise and say, yeah, I'd like to be a voice just dealing with health risk issues, with medical integrity... Dr. Church, you familiar with the American College of Pediatricians?
I am, and I think they also gave me a letter of support, as a matter of fact.
Yes, so they were formed in 2002, protesting against the American Academy of Pediatrics support for adoption by gay couples. And it's small, it's a small group, but it has a voice, and it's growing. So we need to fan the flames of these different professional organizations that are speaking the truth based on medical data. So, Dr. Church, you were saying that you're even concerned. Let's say you have a patient who is a homosexual man. He's engaging in what would commonly be called sodomy. Because of that, he is now suffering negative health consequences. So let's just say I'm overweight, I'm out of shape, I drink chocolate milkshakes four times a day. I see my doctor. My blood pressure is high. My cholesterol is high. And he says to me, Mike, you're going to have to change your diet and start exercising. Otherwise, you're going to risk serious heart disease. Okay, that's what a good doctor would do. But you're saying that you're hesitant to tell a homosexual patient that his actions are contributing to his health problems for fear of it being called discrimination?
I am, and that's the hypocrisy of this. I mean, we counsel patients about, you know, smoking, about excess alcohol, and arguably some of the risks involved with these behaviors are equal or greater than those, and yet we're supposed to stay silent when it comes to this subject because now this is a new cultural icon that can't be attacked.
Yeah, it's really a terrible shame, and it shows not only how hypocritical we are, but how harmful this is. Last question, we've got about a minute and a half. What have your colleagues that you work with over the years at Harvard said? Have you interacted with them about this?
Well, a few have been highly supportive, and yet most of them are unwilling to come forward, and I think many of them that I considered to be friends and colleagues have basically thrown me under the bus. So it's a subject that, yeah, people will feel strongly about sometimes, and even if they do, they don't seem to want to come forward. So with a few exceptions, most of them have acknowledged that they think that I'm being discriminated against, like reverse discrimination, and treated unfairly, but they, by and large, stay silent when it comes to the administration.
Well, Dr. Church, I and many others, as you know, are standing with you. And
thank you.
You're doing what's right. You're being opposed for what's right. This is a matter of truth and love being opposed for no good reason. And we trust, whatever the immediate outcome of things, that ultimately not only will you be vindicated, but you'll be blessed. And you'll know, even in this world, you'll know that you're doing the right thing and things are going well. Thanks so much for joining us today. And be strong in the Lord, my friend.
Thank you.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back. Welcome back to The Line of Fire. This is Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Listen, friends, this is one of the reasons I have been saying what I've been saying for so many years. This is one of the reasons I have been sounding the alarm. What happened to Dr. Paul Church is a perfect illustration. You have political correctness run amok. You have a medical doctor who has a difficult time telling his patients what they need to hear, because if he does, he'll be called discriminatory or bigoted or homophobic. And ultimately, by saying to the hospital, it's wrong for doing what you're doing. You're sending out an e-blast to everyone on the hospital staff saying, next week is Gay Pride Week. We want to be celebrating this and that. We're inviting everyone to be part of this event. Why is a medical hospital doing that? We say, well, maybe because they realize by affirming those who identify as LGBT, that that will lead to a better psychological profile, that the more affirmation that they have, that they will then be happier with themselves, and then suicide rates will go down, and substance abuse rates will drop, and sexual promiscuity will drop, and therefore, as a hospital, it's a good medical investment. Well, first, I question whether the hospital is actually thinking in that way. Second, I question whether the data would actually support that. What do I mean? Well, I mean in cities that are absolutely gay-affirming, where gay men and women live absolutely freely without fear of, quote, discrimination from the general public, because they live in communities that are the great part of the general public, and those that live in those neighborhoods also are very affirming as well, by and large, that you still have the sexual promiscuity that's much higher than in heterosexual circles. You still have higher substance abuse. You still have higher rates of sexually transmitted diseases. So the data wouldn't support it either. But the responsible thing for a hospital is to look at very strict health-related issues. So could you imagine a hospital supporting cigarette smoking? But look, cigarette smokers are being discriminated against. It used to be that you turn on any TV show and movie and the characters are smoking cigarettes, and now you hardly see that at all because we realize the health risks. Well, that makes cigarette smokers feel bad. You're saying, well, they weren't born that way. Gays and lesbians are born that way. Well, there remains no reputable scientific evidence that gays and lesbians are born that way. But even so, children of alcoholics, what, 75% chance of becoming alcoholics themselves, whatever the numbers actually are, they're off the charts higher than someone who is not the child of alcoholic parents. So if we are campaigning against alcohol or against drunk driving, they could feel bad. They could feel discriminated against. I mean, these things are all possible, no? That someone could feel discriminated against. Let's just say things turn in society that we need to show solidarity for cigarette smokers. We need to show solidarity for those that like to drink a lot. We need to show solidarity for those who are overweight. Look, it's hard these days living in America with what our restaurants serve and what is put in foods. You know, just you go to a grocery store and get what you think is healthy foods, and it's got sugars and salts and other things put in it. And, you know, it's not easy. I was overweight for years. It's not easy to just take weight off. I always feel bad when I see someone morbidly obese. I think, yikes, they got to feel terrible about themselves. The effort just to walk from one place to another has got to be terrible. They've got to know it's unhealthy, and yet it's so hard to get to weight where they want to be. So let's have Fat Pride celebrations, and maybe someone has an obesity gene. There's more evidence for an obesity gene than a gay gene, that's for sure. So let's say someone has an obesity gene. We're having Fat Pride parades now, and you know, McDonald's has had a dip in business in recent years, and let's celebrate Fat Pride and McDonald's, you know, McDonald's Day and so on for fast food, and let's get a Big Mac and extra large fries and so on and so forth. No, a hospital wouldn't do that. That'd be irresponsible for a hospital. Look, even if you disagree with me on gay and lesbian issues, I hope you can at least see the point here. The bottom line is because God did not design men to be with men, and he didn't design women to be with women, that there are greater health risks associated with acts between men and men. And from what I've read, documentation, there are even more health risks over a period of a lifetime that lesbians have versus heterosexual women. Now, one thing I've read, I'm not a doctor or scientist or a researcher in this area, so I'm just repeating some studies that I looked at and saw summarized, that because, on average, lesbian women would have far less children over a lifetime than heterosexual women, and some would never have any children, that there are actually negative health risks associated with that, that there's some cancers that develop that are much, much less likely to develop, much, much less likely to develop if a woman has children over the course of her life. I can't cite the studies off the top of my head. If someone really wanted to find out more about that, I'm able to grab those for you. I'm sure I've cited the documentation in some articles or in one or two of my books. But the point is, it's just contrary to God's design. So let's say that you say, look, I've got no problem with gay couples and gay friends and gay coworkers. That's not my issue at all. I'm simply saying, as a medical doctor, that men having sex with men, in particular acts of sodomy and other acts like that, have all kinds of health risks associated with them that, generally speaking, heterosexuals won't experience. Therefore, I'm protesting my hospital celebrating gay pride. Of course that's valid. Of course that's right. And as Dr. Church said, if only he could get a hearing with his colleagues, with his peers, they would surely recognize that it's scary when you speak to people and they look at you and they're silent. What? You're not getting it? What? You're agreeing that I'm being discriminatory? May God open the eyes of the hospital, the staff, the board that is looking at his appeal, and may they do the right thing. All right, friends, here's a great way that you can get a great resource. One of these debates that you will be totally engaged for the full 2 hours. It's on two DVDs. Sid Roth, moderating debate between Rabbi Shmuley Boteach, America's most famous rabbi, and yours truly, on who is the real kosher Jesus, with some very passionate, intense interaction. A great tool to watch as Christians, a great tool to give to your Jewish friends. Very informative. It is a $20 value plus postage, but it's yours today for your gift of any size. Be as generous as you can, but everybody take advantage of this. Call now 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. Give it out as a holiday present as well. 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line today, we need to stand up and speak the truth regardless of cost or consequences. God expects nothing less than that from us. The whole nation is talking about it. What is a Christian response to the refugee crisis? It is a Christian response the same as an American response.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I wrote an article on Sunday while traveling from Montreal. I had 4 great days of ministry with a fine church there, Good News Chapel. 4 days of ministry in Montreal. And then while flying from Montreal to Orlando on Sunday, wrote an article, got to my hotel in Orlando late Sunday night, sharpened the article, and it went live Monday morning. It's called 4 Reflections on the Syrian Refugee Crisis. We're going to talk about that and raise some very, very important issues as Christians. We've discussed it last week. I want to revisit it. I want to get your feedback. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884 is the number to call. And the question is, what should the government be doing? Republican candidates, Republican governors, Republican leadership, by and large, saying we need to slow down the intake of refugees, or we need to shut the door on Muslim refugees from Syria right now until we can vet them better. And some have said we just take in Christian refugees. Donald Trump has gone as far as saying that we should have a registry of all Muslims in America. Obviously, that scares a lot of people, thinking back to when other groups were singled out. For example, World War II, what we did to Japanese Americans who were, that's a sad part of our history, one I don't remember learning about in school, to tell you the truth. But on the other hand, do we let terrorists in? 866-34-TRUTH. Joey, grab clips number 9 and 10. This was from yesterday. Reverend Oliver White on the Sean Hannity Show on the radio, talking about, should Christians take in Muslim refugees? What should the government do? How should we handle this as the church? Clip number 9.
Reverend, let's say that this number is right, 13% of Syrian refugees support ISIS. So let's say we take in 100. That means 13 out of the 100 would be ISIS supporters, sympathizers. Would you take them into your church?
I certainly would.
You would?
Yeah.
And when they committed an act of terror, even though the FBI and Homeland Security Chairman Mike McCall and our Director of National Intelligence warned you that ISIS would infiltrate, if they blew up your church and killed people, would you feel like you were responsible?
Yes, I would.
Yeah, but so you're willing to gamble with the lives of your parishioners?
No, I'm not. I think gambling is the wrong word.
No, I think it's the right word.
The doors to my church are open to anybody.
All right. Doors of my church are open to anybody. But if you knew that 1 in 10 people coming through from a particular group, let's say Swedes, blonde-haired Swedes over 6 feet tall, that 1 in 10 of them was a potential mass killer who could start shooting people in your church, would you screen the 6 foot tall plus tall blonde Swedes? Clip number 10, the conversation continues.
Picture my usher saying to someone from the ISIS regime, I'm sorry, sir, but or ma'am, you can't come in here because you are this or that.
All right. Well, if that person from ISIS was wearing a suicide bomber's vest, I would hope if you had ushers that had any sense, they would stop them at the door and walk them down the street before they blow themselves up and call police immediately. And then if you can disarm them, try to preach the gospel to them, but you don't let them in with the vest. So where do we draw the line? Who do we take in? Who don't we take in? I'm going to weigh in with some of my thoughts and get your calls. 866-348-7884.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yeah, by God's grace, I really seek to be your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. So what do you think the government should do? How stringent should the government be on taking in refugees? What do you think of what the various candidates are saying? Obviously, Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders on the complete opposite side from Donald Trump, Ben Carson. Senator Cruz has proposed that we only take in the Christian refugees because we have no history of ISIS or these radical groups working among the Christian Syrians. That view has been mocked and criticized by others. A president has weighed in against the Republican candidates. What should the government do? What should the church do? 866-34-TRUTH. All right. I wrote an article with four reflections on the Syrian refugee crisis. Let me lay out my 4 points and let me respond to a mocking criticism by Stephen Colbert on his late night TV show about the idea of giving preference to Christians or only taking in Christian refugees. The 4 points I made are, number one, the government should major on security. The church should major on compassion. In other words, it is the role of the government to protect the national interest, the security of our country. It's not the primary goal of the government to provide care for all refugees around the world, although we've done our best to open our doors to refugees through the centuries, and many of our forefathers and our own families came from other countries fleeing, and America was their place of refuge. But the church, that's where the church can step up. We can sponsor refugees. In the late 1970s and early 1980s, I was part of a church that heard about the crisis of the boat people in Vietnam. And we opened up our homes. We all took in couples, singles, families from Vietnam that had fled with the fall of the country and the North Vietnamese going to war all out against the South Vietnamese. The South Vietnamese fled. Terrible suffering. About half the people died fleeing in boats. Many others, women raped. The men had the gold knocked out of their teeth by pirates, thrown overboard. Terrible suffering. Well, we opened our homes and resettled these people. Yes, they weren't terrorists, but there are plenty that are not terrorists. There are plenty of individuals and families, both Muslim and Christian, that are already listed by Christian relief associations that we can say, okay, we want to help sponsor them in our community or even in our homes. And then I said, second priority should be given to Christian refugees. I'll come back to that point in a moment. Number three, Muslim nations must step up their sponsorship of Muslim refugees. You're talking about people who have the same religion, Islam, speak the same language, Arabic. They have the same general culture. Why not do more? Most of the Gulf state nations have done almost nothing, and many of them are rich with oil wealth. Why can't they do more to sponsor their own refugees? And lastly, we have to guard our hearts against unchristlike attitudes, demonizing all Muslims, thinking all Muslims want to blow us up, thinking our Muslim neighbors want to kill us. They're mortified by these things. And many refugees who are genuine refugees, the daughters have been raped, the wives have been raped, the men have been threatened at gunpoint, family member after family member cut down and killed, and now Americans are shutting the doors to them. They can't understand that because they are fleeing from terror. Yet we know that the refugee crisis is a Trojan horse that is being used by terrorists to come into Europe and come into America. So how do we handle it? Well, Stephen Colbert took exception, mocking exception, to the idea that preference should be given to Christian refugees. And listen to what he had to say.
If you want to know if somebody is Christian, just ask them to complete this sentence. Jesus said, I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you... And if they don't say, welcomed me in, they are either a terrorist or they are running for president.
All right, now here's the thing with what Stephen Colbert said. By all means, challenge us with the words of Jesus from Matthew 25, verses 31 to 46, calling us to take in the hurting, the needy, to minister to the poor, to minister to the suffering. Jesus certainly calls us to do that. But let's remember something very important. Jesus said first and foremost there, talking about the least of these, my brethren. Who's he talking about? He's either talking about persecuted Christians around the world, others who will be persecuted for following him. And he's saying that's where we help first and foremost. Others think he's talking about Jewish people who are in the midst of terrible suffering, rejected by different countries, put out. And here there's an opportunity for Christians to help them, as they did say during the time of the Nazis, that Christians risked their lives to help Jews who were being persecuted. But hear me clearly. It says in Galatians, the sixth chapter, that we should take every opportunity we have to do good, in particular to those of the household of faith. So yes, help Muslim refugees who are legitimately in need, who are not trying to export terror. The government does its best job to vet, and then we work with Christian organizations to bring in those that we can identify as genuinely in need, genuine refugees from terror, be they Muslim or Christian. But let's give priority to our Christian brothers and sisters. The fact of the matter is, we are called to. And one of my friends, a pastor from a major church in Tennessee, was over in the Middle East recently and spoke to some of these refugees who had fled to Jordan, Christian refugees. I said, do they feel like the church in America has abandoned them? They said, yes, that's how they feel. And many Christians say, well, what do you mean? We feel terrible. We pray. We just don't know what to do. There are ways with working together with Christian relief organizations that we can sponsor Christian refugees. And let's also face the fact that they are facing a genocide in the Middle East, that they are being wiped out. You have countries, Iraq and Syria, with ancient Christian populations going back almost to the time of Jesus, ancient populations numbering in the millions and thriving, and now they're down to several hundred thousand. And sometimes it's the ones that are fleeing for their lives. They're the lucky ones because they haven't been killed. They haven't been sold into slavery. They haven't been taken as sex slaves and things like that. They haven't had their children buried alive. Sometimes the ones fleeing for their lives, they're the lucky ones. Of course, we have to put them first. And of course, that would be in keeping with scriptural teaching. You say, but there's so much in the Bible where God calls Israel to take in the stranger and the refugee. Absolutely. And we need to do whatever we can as the church to do that, while the government needs to concentrate on security issues. But here's the point. Israel killed hostile neighbors. If you were a neighbor of Israel and had bad intentions towards Israel and wanted to kill the people of Israel, they were called by God to kill them. They were called by God to exterminate the ones that were trying to exterminate them, and then to live peacefully with those who wanted to live peacefully. So you have a legitimate stranger, refugee, take that person in. You have potential terrorists that's there to blow you up. That was not one of the ones that Israel was called to take in. Let's handle the scriptures rightly. Let's ask God for a heart of love towards all people, that we don't just demonize an entire group and make everyone into a radical Muslim terrorist. Let us be very careful not to do that. And let us pray for the salvation of radical Muslim terrorists while also praying for our government to bring justice to them and to stop them in their murderous acts. And let us help our Christian brothers and sisters first and foremost. That's my view. 866-34-TRUTH. Do you agree with me? Do you disagree with me? What is your take? 866-348-7884. Let's start with Russell. Russell, gone already? All right, we'll go to Cary, North Carolina. Suzanne, you're up first. What's your take, your opinion on the Syrian refugee crisis?
Well, I have two points I want to make. One is that I've been trying to help a Pakistani family for a while that is illegally in Malaysia. They're persecuted Christians. And there are hundreds of thousands of refugees in Malaysia trying to find homes. And so I want to make sure that the Syrians don't necessarily take priority because there are people that have been waiting for a long time. So that was one concern.
Yep.
And I'm okay if they're properly vetted. But the second thing I'd like to say is I really think that it's great that we're having this dialogue, even though people disagree and criticize each other. Because as a country, the more dialogue we have, the better solution we'll come up with.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, how did you get involved with these other refugees? And I really appreciate you raising that to remind us of the fact that there are other refugees who have been fleeing from real hardship in their home countries. And they've been waiting for some time. How did you get involved?
Well, it's interesting. I actually met this guy on the internet, on Facebook. I noticed what a great Christian witness he was. But I was concerned about, you can't always believe what you have on Facebook. So I actually got in contact with some organizations that I was aware of in that area. One was the Methodist Church. I'm a Methodist, and they had a Methodist church in Kuala Lumpur. So they actually went and met him. And then there were a couple other organizations that have talked to him and tried to help him. And he's got, you know, two daughters, and they would love to go to the United States, to a European country. So I want to make sure that we remember there are people that have been fighting.
All right, there are others, absolutely. Hey, thank you for the call. 866-34-TRUTH. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
There's one theme that's found over and over again in the scriptures. It's that God answers the prayers of his people. He hears our cries. He may not come through when we want him to, and there may be some inexplicable delays, but in the end, he comes through. He hears us. That's why we pray. This theme is found everywhere in the scriptures. Yeah, that is from the DVD, Where is God When It Hurts? It's quite an eye-opening DVD. It deals with the Holocaust. We shot it in New York City. I remember the day, a light, rainy day. I remember the intensity of the things that we were discussing and the edifying, hope-filled nature of the discussion. You can get that DVD from our Think It Through TV show absolutely free when you order the book 60 Questions Christians Ask About Jewish Beliefs and Practices, and we have reduced the price by paying the shipping for you. So it's only $15 for the book and the DVD. You can order by going to the website askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org, right on the homepage. You'll find it there. You have no idea how often I tell people your answer to the question you're asking me is found in the 60 Questions Christians Ask About Jewish Beliefs and Practices book. You'll find it super helpful, interesting, edifying, and the DVD is one that really brings comfort in the midst of pain. They also make great holiday gifts, either Hanukkah or Christmas gifts for Christian or for Jewish friends, either or both. All right, 866-34-TRUTH is the number to call as we just continue our discussion about the Syrian refugee crisis. Before I go back to the phones, my 4 points in my article, 4 reflections on the Syrian refugee crisis, which you can read by going to my website, askdrbrown.org, clicking on latest article. 1, the government should major on security. The church should major on compassion. 2, priorities should be given to Christian refugees. 3, Muslims must step up their sponsorship of Muslim refugees. 4, we must guard our hearts against unchrist-like attitudes. What do you think of Donald Trump saying that we should monitor mosques that are radicalizing people? I've been feeling we should do that for years. What do you feel about his suggestion that we may need a registry of all Muslims in America? I personally have a real issue with that. So I agree with one point, disagree with the other point. And of course, there's going to be a way in which Mr. Trump suggests things that I'll differ with in general, the spirit of it. Ted Cruz has said we only let in Christian refugees from Syria right now because there is no history of them being secret ISIS infiltrators. And remember, from everything we know so far, a Muslim terrorist will not openly identify as a Christian and therefore deny Islam in order to perpetrate acts of terror. And when Jeb Bush was questioned, how can we tell if they're Christians? He said, yeah, well, we can, kind of shrugged his shoulders. We can. Well, of course, that got mocked by some of the media. But yeah, it's pretty easy to identify as long as the papers, that's the key thing, are the papers accurate? Otherwise, we pretty well know who's a Christian and who's a Muslim by family history and identification. unless someone is a more recent convert. So it's not really a mystery. And again, we do not have evidence of ISIS infiltrating Christian groups and posing as Christians and professing Jesus as Lord and so on and so forth and being baptized and denying their Islamic faith in the process in order to infiltrate and be terrorists. That would be considered an act of apostasy. But should we do as Senator Cruz is suggesting and shut the doors completely? My suggestion is we give priority to Christian refugees. As long as we can vet the others carefully, then we still let in Muslim refugees, but we give priority to Christian refugees. 866-34-TRUTH. But I think Senator Cruz as well has raised an important point, an important approach as well. Let's go to Cheryl in Greensboro. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you so much. For me, I guess I'm from the old school. I know the Bible says, have mercy, be merciful as your Father in heaven is merciful. At the same time, I hope everyone is aware that just because it hasn't been evident, just because it hasn't been proven, doesn't mean that they are not infiltrators and that there's a brotherhood of Muslims. And just as Christians believe in the brotherhood of Christianity, Christians, that we are together as a group, that Muslims may feel the same way. But that makes me wary that even though they may not profess being radicalized or anything, I'm very wary of, you know, we only have so much land space. We have only so much ourselves. We've got many, many people coming to this country illegal. We've got many, many, many resources being drained, and we're having a hard time taking care of our own people. How are we going to take in other people and take care of them as well? We only have so much land space. We can only do so much. There's not enough money in this country to support everybody.
Yeah, I mean,
everybody gets taxes.
We do have real questions about what we can afford to do and not afford to do. We want to have mercy. We want to have compassion. We want to, just lost Cheryl. We want to do whatever we can to help, but we must use wisdom. Look, let me ask you this question on a practical level, all right? When we find out that Ebola is spreading in a certain country, say in West Africa, somewhere in West Africa, we then say, okay, no one can come into America from that region or from that country until this crisis is guarded properly, is checked. And what we'll do is we'll send doctors over. We'll send others over. We'll send medical supplies. We'll do whatever we can to help, right? We will do whatever we can to help, but we have to make sure a plague doesn't break out. So if we're fairly confident that those who have been radicalized are seeking to enter our country and they've entered Europe. And I was reading what a Syrian American said. He's been here for 30 years. He came over when he was 10 years old. And I believe when he was 10, he's 40 now. He's been here 30 years. And he said, you have to understand, in Syria, it's not a matter of getting corrupt documents, you know, that someone falsifies your passport to make it look like you're somebody else. He said, but you can go to the government and get official documents. The government worker has no money to feed his family. You just pay him a bribe, and he will now say that you are someone else. He will give you official documentation that you are someone else. It's government documentation. So even though we're doing our best to vet, others have said that it's very difficult to properly vet. So let's say that you wanted to reach out to 10 people in your neighborhood, 10 homeless people in your neighborhood, but one in the 10 had been involved in a number of rapes. You didn't know which one. Police were unable to figure out which one it was, but there were good suspicions. It was one of these 10. There was just no evidence yet to arrest someone. Would you, at random, take these people into your home? You don't know which is which. Take them into your home. I mean, these are serious questions. I know Christians are risk takers in terms of going to difficult areas, and I've done it myself to preach the gospel. But practical wisdom, where does that play in? We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
My family lived in Saudi Arabia. I cannot describe to you what kind of a place Saudi Arabia is. There is apartheid, gender apartheid. It's a place, you know, using modern tools and modern money and money from oil, they actually enforce 7th century rules.
That is Ayan Hirsi Ali on Fox News yesterday. Here, is a woman raised in the midst of radical Islam, not a religious believer at all right now. But she wants the world to know. Well, we'll tell you what, let's play clip number 8 as well on Fox News, actually, with Hannity yesterday. Listen to what she has to say about radical Islam.
We are self-intimidating. I don't think that we are being forced by outside powers. Our president is not being forced by outside powers to take the position that he's taking. He has taken it after a lot of thought. He thinks it's strategic. I just think it's a strategy that has failed. He's not the only one who tried it. All Western establishment leaders have insisted we are not at war with Islam. It's absolutely true. We are not at war with Islam. We're not waging war on Islam. That is absolutely true. But within Islam, and using Islamic theology, Islamic tradition, Islamic philosophy, we have hundreds of thousands of people who are at war with us.
That's the truth. Radical Islam is at war with us. Now, I'm constantly interacting with those who say radical Islam is Islam. Islam that is not radical, Islam that is peaceful, Islam that is willing to dwell peacefully with Christians and Hindus and Buddhists and atheists and so on, that is not real Islam. That is deceptive Islam. That is humanist Islam. That is a departure from Muhammad and the Quran. And let's remember that all early Islamic expansion was by the sword. It was war. It was capturing nations. It was subjugating them to Sharia law, to Islamic standards. It was making those who didn't convert into second-class citizens. That's how Islam grew and spread initially. Did it become more sophisticated, more domesticated over the years? Did it leave its warring ways behind? Is that a departure from real Islam? That is a fair debate to have. I had guests on last week that consistently said that radical Islam is true Islam. It is Islam at its very core and nature. Let that debate go on. All right, let that debate go on. However, what cannot be debated is that radical Islam is at war with America. We cannot debate that. And therefore, when we think about the refugee crisis, my view again, number one, put persecuted Christians first. Put them highest on the list because genocide is being committed against them. Their numbers are diminishing rapidly. They are having to flee from their ancient homelands where they have been for centuries, for almost 2 millennia in some cases, in Iraq and Syria, fleeing for their lives. Sometimes, as I've said repeatedly, it's only the lucky ones or the blessed ones that are able to flee because others are kidnapped and killed and subjected to all types of horrific treatment if they won't convert to Islam. So that's why I say sometimes the ones that are the lucky ones are the ones that get to flee. But we should give them priority. There is genocide being committed against them. They do not have the options to go, say, to Saudi Arabia claims they've taken in 2.5 million Syrian refugees. Others are disputing that number, but other Gulf states seems to haven't taken in any. That's the criticism. So these Muslim nations can step up for sure. Yeah, America can do its part, but let it do its part wisely. How? The government majors on security. Christians can major on compassion. Working together, we can really be of help both to Christians and Muslims. I got a provocative question I want to ask when we come back. 866-34-TRUTH.
Fire we please. Send the fire. It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. It's such a joy as I travel to different countries and then all around America to meet folks all over. At the airport, it could be at baggage claim, that'll come up to me to let me know, hey, Dr. Brown, I follow you on Facebook. I read all your articles. I've been doing teaching based on your articles. I repost these. Met a young man in Canada. He said, I've read all your material on Jewish objections. He said, I feel called to reach Jewish people with the gospel. Another man came up to me. I feel called to help fund the translation of the real kosher Jesus into Hebrew, to get it out in Hebrew in Israel. Others just thanking us. So I want you to know I appreciate that. I get the abuse day and night. I could take a week of shows and just read you the abusive posts and emails and social media comments. I mean, ugly and despicable and demeaning. And that comes with the turf, that comes with being on the front lines and speaking the truth in love. But I want you to know we get far more encouragement. We get far more appreciation. And I appreciate the appreciation. I am thankful for your appreciation. And by God's grace, I am praying and working hard, and my team is praying and working hard, that we can amplify my voice to speak even more loudly, even more clearly, even more powerfully. 866-34-TRUTH. Let me put out my controversial question, and then I want to go back to the phone, starting with Courtney in Chesapeake, Virginia. But here's my question, and I'm slightly changing subjects because I have mentioned different comments made by Democratic and Republican candidates regarding the Syrian refugee crisis. But so I've mentioned Donald Trump's position as well. But I have a question. If you are an evangelical believer, a committed Christian, follower of Jesus, Bible is God's word in your view, and you plan at this stage, if the elections were tomorrow, you plan to vote for Donald Trump, I'm just curious to know on what basis. There are other candidates. I've endorsed Senator Ted Cruz. There are other candidates I feel are excellent candidates. I simply feel that Senator Cruz is the best candidate and would really take on the Washington establishment and therefore have the most hope of bringing about change in good ways for our nation as president. And I feel he's trustworthy in other capacities. Doesn't mean I'm his apologist, that I'm going to agree with every position he takes or every word he says. And it doesn't mean that I'm going to bash his opponents. So if you said, I really like Ben Carson, or I really like Marco Rubio, or I really like Mike Huckabee, or you had another candidate that you supported, I think Carly Fiorina could do a great job. I wouldn't have as many questions for you. But if you're an evangelical, wouldn't you want someone who has a strong moral foundation, who has a historic, solid moral foundation? There are many incredible qualities Donald Trump has, and I understand he's articulating the frustration and anger of many Americans, and people think he would get things done. But if you're talking about the commander-in-chief, the next commander-in-chief, I'm terribly grieved and ashamed over what our current commander-in-chief has done in the midst of the crisis with radical Islam. And I'm wondering, okay, if you watch, say, the way our president is made public statements after terror attacks compared to, say, the way Ronald Reagan did, you think, okay, we had a statesman then and we don't now. I'm not a President Obama basher. If I was, he'd be my subject every day on radio for weeks on end. And that's not who I am, and that's not the emphasis you're going to get from me. I have to be really grieved over a certain subject to speak out when it concerns the president. I'll ignore 5 or 10 or 15 things of lesser nature because I'm not going to be one that's bashing the president every week and just a conservative radio host, which is not primarily who I am. But it concerns me that evangelicals would say, yeah, we're going to get behind Donald Trump, when to me there's a deep, deep question. I mean, we're not just questioning his profession of Christianity. I mean, that's clearly skin deep, and I pray that he'll really come to know the Lord and be born again, understand what it means. I believe he really thinks he is a Christian. I just say he doesn't know what it means to be a Christian. So I'm praying that he'll really know that and really come to faith and know the Lord. And if he really knows the Lord and already and somehow it's just not evident, well, let us all be surprised, or let me be surprised. But it's clear that he doesn't have a historic, clear moral compass and moral base. And I think in other ways, things could be out of control in terms of his actions or things he'd say towards other world leaders that deeply concerned me, that I don't think would be befitting as a president. So I'm not asking you to call so I can argue with you, okay? I am not asking you to call so I can argue. I had a call last week from a dear brother that wanted to know my views on a pre-trib rapture, and I thought he was just asking for my views. Somehow when he began to present his viewpoint and explain his viewpoint, I jumped in and wanted to challenge a point, and I think I got a little testy with him just because and he was respectful and honoring. I wanted to say how much he appreciated the ministry and so on, and he and his son did. And I just caught me off guard when it became a challenge. I'm happy to be challenged. I just wasn't expecting it. And I believe I did not handle the call in the most Christ-like way. And come Friday again, I hope to remember to bring it up if we're live on Friday, day after Thanksgiving, just to mention that in case he's listening again, or if you're listening now from Texas. But I'm saying that in advance to say I'm not setting you up for an argument. You give your view, and I thank you, and that's it. I'm not going to challenge you, okay? I'm just curious. I'm just trying to understand. All right, fair enough? 866-34-TRUTH. So first, another call on Syrian refugees, and then we'll take some calls on evangelicals who support Donald Trump. Just curious to know why, because I've talked about it with my wife, Nancy. What if it was Donald Trump against Hillary Clinton? Well, obviously, I'm not going to vote for Hillary Clinton. Could I vote for Donald Trump? That's a real question. I'm not giving a definitive answer at this point. I'm saying it's a genuine question. All right, Courtney in Chesapeake, Virginia. Thanks for weighing in on the Syrian refugee crisis. What's your view?
Well, I just wanted to say, you know, I've been watching for several years the footage of the Syrian refugees.
Yeah.
And these people have taken off to the woods. They've taken, you know, everything that they have on their backs. And they're running from the same fight that we're fighting. You know, these Christian, it's a Christian genocide that's going on over there in Syria. And these people have watched their children slaughtered in front of their faces. And my whole thing is that they need help. They need some kind of help. But I think that, you know, a screening process, I mean, how do you screen which ones are Muslims or the radical Muslims? I've met several, you know, nice Muslims. The ones that are not radicalized. And, you know, they tell me, I don't know where those Muslims come from because that's not what I was taught, you know. But how do you screen between the good and the bad? So I think that instead of, you know, having them in our borders, just develop safe camps for them to have a shelter where they can have food and they can have, you know, shelter and safety. And have good protection, and then that would be a way to screen them which one is radical and not. Because this can happen in the United States. This is not something that can't happen here, you know, where the Muslims take over, or, you know, and it might come in years to come. Who knows? But me as a Christian, my view is that these are our Christian brothers and sisters, and they're being persecuted. And it says in the Bible that in the last days there will be persecution. I mean, our missionaries go over there and they're slaughtered and killed. It's the same thing. Well, these people need help and they're scared. And, you know, if you can't have that compassion that Christ calls us to have and that love, then what are we here for?
Right. And that's the great challenge. You know, here's the other issue, Courtney, is that what we're seeing, say, in England or in France, in Belgium, you're having second-generation Muslims who are becoming radicalized, that their parents came over to England, came over to France, came over to Belgium, and the parents were not radicals, and the kids grew up, got good education. So-called Jihadi John would be a perfect example. Yeah, and from what we know, killed by an American drone attack recently. But the radicalizing of the next generation, that's another challenge, because that, how can you got a legitimate refugee who comes in, settles in, is a fine, upstanding part of the community, in no way working harmfully against the best interests of the United States.
Yeah, right, I mean, they're all radicalized Christians that have gone out and killed all these abortionists. You know.
Well, yeah, but if that very example though, how many in over 40 years of fighting Roe v. Wade, less than a handful, literally, where you've had abortion doctors killed by Christians, less than a handful, as opposed to tens of thousands of acts of Islamic terror. But questions we must sort through. We will be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Okay, you can still weigh in on the Syrian refugee crisis. Again, my 4 points in my most recent article. 1, the government should major on security. The church should major on compassion. 2, priority should be given to Christian refugees. 3, Muslim nations must step up their sponsorship of Muslim refugees. 4, we must guard our hearts against un-Christ-like attitudes. I'll come back to that last point in a moment. But I've asked just a side question as I've interacted with what some of the different political leaders, Democrat and Republican, have suggested regarding the refugee crisis. I asked a question, and I'm not going to challenge. I simply want to get a perspective. As an evangelical Christian, why you would want to vote for Donald Trump. What I understand, if I'm right, is you think he'd get things done. You believe we need somebody that's not beholden to Washington, that's going to be independent. He articulates maybe some of the frustration and anger that other Americans are feeling, and he's going to tell it like it is and not be politically correct. I think those are some of the reasons that he's popular. You think he can make a deal and get things done. Yet, without a clear historic moral base and even a clear history of being a conservative, being a Republican, that's secondary. Being a conservative and having a strong personal moral base historically, look, he's made his money, tons of money on gambling casinos. Why you would want to put your trust in him as the president? So I'm just asking, okay? And you're going to give me your view, and I'm not going to fight with you about it, okay? 866-34-TRUTH. Rockville, Maryland, Sarah, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. I have a cold right now, but I'm going to work through it. I think Donald Trump can make a way. He can win. I think he's the only one that can win against Hillary. And I think he can make a way for people like Cruz and Santorum and all those other great people like Dr. Carson to have a voice and have a position. I don't think somebody that is, Cruz to me is almost perfect, but the thing is, our country doesn't look for perfect. You know, while I was waiting, I got this amusing thing that I just thought of when, you know, think about the movie, The Ten Commandments, where Moses says to Nefertiti, you may just be the pretty poison which God moves his hand to work out. Trump might just be that pretty poison that God uses. I mean, I know it's amusing, but he doesn't. I think Trump can do and keep things even, and he can save America, and then the really good, whatever, a lot of people want a Catholic, a lot of people want an evangelical. I think I've talked enough.
Got it. All right, great job talking through the cold. Thank you. By the way, latest polls I read had Marco Rubio doing the best against Hillary Clinton. Ted Cruz also beating Hillary Clinton. I think several candidates also beating Hillary Clinton. Surprisingly, Donald Trump didn't come out as well in that this, but the polls constantly change. But thanks. I appreciate the perspective. Thank you for sharing it. 866-34-TRUTH. Let me get back to one more point, and then I'll return to your calls. I was sent a clip of a video. that was recorded. Excuse me. It was an audio message with a picture of one of our grads from our ministry school who ended up being killed by Al-Qaeda terrorists working in a very, very dangerous Islamic nation. I can't say where for security reasons, but this was a few years ago. It was heartbreaking, left behind a young widow and two little children. And he was talking about coming back to America and being shocked by the attitude of Americans towards Muslims. And even some Christians saying, yeah, I know what the New Testament tells us, but, you know, I kind of think I'd rather have the Old Testament mentality, you know, wipe them out. And he was saying, you know, they're talking as if all Muslims want to kill people, all Muslims want to blow people up and so on and so forth. And you know, how can we have these attitudes and how can we be so biased and demonize everyone? Yes, there are people who are absolutely out to kill. He said, look, Al-Qaeda is doing it where I live. But you're demonizing all Muslims. He was shocked by that. We've got to be careful with our attitudes. We've got to be careful with our attitudes so that we don't just demonize whole groups of people. We don't just demonize all Muslims or most Muslims because of what radical Muslims do. Even if you think that the Muslims who are not radical are not being true to their faith, that's fine. But in their mind, they're being true to their faith. Okay, they believe they themselves are Muslims, and they're mortified by the things that are being done. And it was really ironic to listen to this, and all the more poignant and powerful knowing he was killed by Al-Qaeda terrorists not long after that. All right, let me grab another call or two in Pleasantsville, Iowa. Becky, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you.
Yes, go ahead.
Are you there?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I want to say that I am not for Donald Trump, and I am not for Donald Trump primarily because he doesn't show any indications whatsoever of giving God any credit for whatever he plans to accomplish. And I believe that America is in great, great trouble until whoever takes over our nation begins to recognize that we have no hope without God.
All right. So, yeah, that again, Becky, thanks for sharing that. That would be my perspective, that although I believe that Donald Trump would want to honor God and believe in the importance of that, that there's not really a fear or reverence of God or an understanding of God. And without a real God-fearing president, could the nation be turned in the right direction? Good question. So that would be another reason that I would be very hesitant in voting for him. Let's see. All right. Got time for one more call. Sophia in Arlington, Texas, you're on.
Hi. Good afternoon. I wanted to weigh in on the question you were asking about Donald Trump being president. First of all, the Bible clearly states what's in the heart flows out the mouth. I don't think Donald Trump will be a good president. It doesn't have anything to me. I'm not a racist person. I come from Fort Hood, Texas, so I know how the military people work hard. It doesn't make a difference whether you're Muslim, whether you're white, you're black. It has nothing to do with that. It's about, he never says anything nice, and he never says anything to encourage the soldiers to say anything. These guys get out there and they work hard, and everything he does is like slandering people. So our it's already jacked up as it is. So do you think him getting in the White House is going to make it
any
better?
Listen, Sophia, let me just say this, and we're right out of time. I had wanted to get your call. Of course, you know, he's appalled about treatment of veterans and stands with our soldiers in that respect. But yeah, that's the thing. The president has to be a statesman. The president can take strong stands, but the president has to be a statesman. They can't just be lashing out and saying what they want to say. And I would think that if Mr. Trump became president, he'd be all the more one to speak his mind. And there are ways that it's done that are divisive and harmful and destructive. All right, maybe another time more can call in and say, well, I would vote for him, but just raise these questions at the end. Okay, my bottom line, I'll say it again. The government should major on security. The church should major on compassion. That way, we can help the refugees.